very warm welcome. David, turn it over to you.
Well, thank you, Paul, and can I say what a great pleasure it is to be back here again. I thought I'd got shot of you lot about 2 years ago, but it's a big surprise to be back once more and see so many of my old standard-setting friends who I've agreed with and debated. Has Saichi got anything right over the last 2 years? Or anyway, we used to have some good fun in those days, and I must say, I did think last night the history of the Advisory Council that many came out with was absolutely spot on. When we first had this council, it consisted really of those who had applied to get onto the ISB and didn't quite make it. And that was a disaster because all they did was stick it to the board for most of the time. The next advisory council was individuals, but we didn't know where they were coming from. It was just sort of random views. And I think the idea of having some sort of constituencies, which you can always say you didn't agree with your constituency, but at least we could hear the views. And I thought that was very important. And as Paul said, and I'm delighted I'm here on your last day, Paul, because we've gone back a long time, that the council does make a big difference to the ISB. I mean, as you know, I took your advice on all occasions. That was all occasions I agreed with it, and totally ignored it when I didn't, of course. And now I'm retired, and I notice some of you saying you're giving up standard setting. Let me tell you, you just get recycled to something else. You know, you're not going to be finished. It's the same group keeps coming back again. And being retired gives you a wonderful sense of irresponsibility. You know, I don't have to be polite like Hans has to be.
You never were.
No. Well, Paul asked me to be polite, and I'll just be my usual charming self, so you've all been warned. But it was great getting back to Scotland and, you know, my roots. I don't know if you realise I was trained in Glasgow, which is one of the toughest parts of the UK. I mean, why they put the Commonwealth Games, the Athletic Games in Glasgow next year, I have no idea. They even put the men's road race cycle through Drumchapel, which is the toughest part of Glasgow. But at least we'll see how fast Bradley Wiggins really can go now. Anyone who comes out of there with two wheels and a chain deserves a medal. Anyway, I'm here to talk about the IVSC. The position I found the IVSC in was very similar to that of the ISB right at the beginning, 12 years ago. A handful of countries used the standards. The staff was good, but very, very small. And when we started at the ISB, we thought we were going to be a think tank. And we would write standards best we could do, and then if a country wanted a standard on leasing or whatever, it would remove its own standard and stick this one in its place. So that's how we thought we'd go. That lasted about 2 months until the European Commission decided that listed companies would have to use IFRS for consolidated accounts. And that made a lot of sense. You can't have a single market with 25 different ways of accounting as you did at that time. So suddenly we're Europe standard setter, and then there was a chain reaction. Charles was instrumental in Australia moving 2 months afterwards to adopt, and then New Zealand, South Africa, and so on. And not without arguments. I remember the discussions we had with the Australian government, almost as bad as the ones I had at Sydney Airport with the immigration officer, who was not an uncritical admirer of the Brits, and for a quarter of an hour asked me some pretty impertinent questions, eventually asking whether or not I had a criminal record, to which I replied I didn't realise I still needed one to get into Australia. But that's where we were. The first 4 years was pretty grim. We were really taking the standards we inherited and changing them, pulling paragraphs out, putting others in for the 2005 adoption. And in a way, that's really where IVSC is at the minute. The relationship is very similar. I always used to argue that there was absolutely no point having different accounting standards worldwide. You know, if the Aussies, which is very unlikely, have the best standard, why don't we just all take it and do it that way? And if someone's got the best idea, we should have it. And that's really what it was all about. The mission was one single set of global standards, accounting standards, and we got a lot of support for that. And in the crisis, you had people like Tim Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury, arguing for one single set of accounting standards on the basis that how could you get banking regulation agreed worldwide if everyone was accounting in a different way, and that is still an issue. But the Treasury in the US was certainly very supportive of IFRS. The globalization issues really started about 1975. You know, if you look at the London Stock Exchange today, there's over 600 companies from 70 jurisdictions raise money in the UK. And that makes a lot of sense. It was fine having your own accounting standards or your own valuation standards when all you did was take money out of your own economy. But that isn't the case anymore. You know, we're widespread, and therefore we have to have a look and make sure we all do things the same way. And IFRS needs global valuations. We require fair value in these standards. And if we're doing it in different ways, we start to have a problem. And that's actually what's happening at the moment. It also affects financial stability, as I'll come on to later. And it was a significant contributory to the 2008 financial crash. When you look at Lehman's, J.P. Morgan refused to accept the collateral values. They demanded more, which Lehman's couldn't provide. Bank of America was called in as the White Knight and found that the valuations of Lehman's assets were $66 billion higher than the Bank of America valued them at. And after the crash, the investigator discovered that Lehman's trading desks were valuing the same instruments in entirely different ways and getting completely different answers. And nobody trusted the values. So valuation was right at the heart of the financial crash. And while people tried to blame it on IAS 39 and things like that, that was not the issue. It was, how do you value a fair value? And 39 was certainly complicated, as you've heard me say numerous times. If you understand it, you haven't read it properly. And in the crisis, Gavin Hastings produced IFRS 9, which Europe still hasn't adopted, which is much simpler and deals with many of the issues that we had in those days. But fair value is not just financial reporting. We have all these discussions about capital adequacy, banks, capital ratios. Valuation is critical for those too, and for risk management. So it goes right to the heart of the financial system. And yet we have a challenge in the valuation profession. It sort of grew up as an adjunct to other professions. You know, accountants valued shares, they valued businesses, we had the real estate people coming up, we had engineers valuing fixed assets and so on. And there was no real core of a profession, and that was a real problem. The accounting profession has CPAs, CAs and so on. The valuation profession doesn't have that. It's completely scattered. And when you look at some of the valuations in accountancy, the magazine of the English Institute of Accountants, there was an article there that showed the valuations of three world-famous companies by different companies. Coca-Cola values $17 billion or $46 billion. Apple, $25 billion or $97 billion. Google, $30 billion or $71 billion. Well, these aren't really numbers you can rely on very well. There's obviously different assumptions in there, and how are they doing it? And that's part of the problem that we have. So we're back to, is there really an valuation profession? And 2 years ago, the now chief accountant of the SEC, Paul Beswick, made a speech at the SEC AICPA conference. And he was criticizing the American profession, but he said there are four organizations involved in valuation, and there are five different qualifications, and they all require different exams. So what is it? Who are the real ones? And that's really one of the reasons that we found that ISB is very wary of allowing valuations when there wasn't a transaction. And one of the first things that we did when we were looking at the intangible asset standard was to confirm the fact that we would not allow self-generated intangibles to go on balance sheet. And that did cause problems. I remember the Australian newspaper magnates being furious. All their mastheads were just removed from the balance sheets and their net worth just fell. And we're talking hundreds of millions of Aussie dollars. And we didn't trust the numbers. So we wouldn't let them have them. And even now, on acquisition, you break up the purchase price into the tangible assets and then a whole series of intangibles such as, well, mastheads, trademarks, etc. How reliable are those? But at least they've got a cap on them. There was a transaction and you could look at them inside. And I do agree these are assets. When I was KPMG's technical partner here in 1988, we had a client that bought Smirnoff. And that's all it did. It just bought Smirnoff. But there was no tangible assets. And the question was, how do you handle that? This way that they would have handled it normally was to call it goodwill. And in those days, the UK had a rather ridiculous standard that meant writing goodwill off instantly against reserves. Well, the purchase of Smirnoff was huge. It blew the reserves away. So we created brand accounting. If you like to look at the article in 1988 in Accountancy, you'll see it there, how to do it. And what we did is we went back to the client and said, how did you value this thing? And they showed us the cash flow projections, and we said, fine, we will monitor those, and if you fail to come up with them, we're going to write this down. And that was the beginning of the impairment route for intangible assets and goodwill. And eventually became a UK standard, which was tougher than the international standard, and gradually went to the United States and so on, which was quite remarkable, really, because when we introduced it, I remember the then chief accountant of the SEC being apoplectic and saying that the US had actually come up with the answer for accounting for goodwill and brands some 30 years earlier, and that was to write them off over 40 years. And as I told the gentleman, we have brands in the United Kingdom, such as Johnny Walker and Gordon's Gin, that are actually older than the United States, and in my humble opinion have done more for the sum of human happiness than the United States. And personally, I'd write off America before I'd ever write off Johnny Walker Blue Label. Well, these are my introductions to valuation, but the big one came in the middle of the crisis when, like Hans, I was a member of the Financial Stability Board, and the markets had frozen, and the purchases that were out there were fire sales. And the question was, what's the fair value? And if people used those values, they were going to wipe out most of the balance sheets. So how did we deal with it? And they looked at the IASB, and we said, this isn't our problem. We're accountants. We're not valuers. And we realized there wasn't anybody. There was absolutely nobody out there doing it. So we had to cobble a working party chaired by John Smith, an IASB member. Gavin was involved, and we got auditors, we got bankers, we got regulators. In 3 months, we came out with, this is what you do in a liquid market. But we felt, really, somebody else should be doing this. And that really was the reason when I was asked to do this role, I felt, well, at least if we can just get that started, that would be something that is worth doing. Because when you look at what's happening with the banks, people didn't realize, Hans has often said it, but in the middle of the 19th century, banks' equity as a proportion of their funding was 33%. By the end of the 19th century, it was 20%. By the end of the 20th century, it was 5%. And by the time of the crash, it was 2%. Well, you don't have to lose very much to lose 2% of equity. And that's what it was down to. And it all relies on the valuations. They may have been negative, for all we know. You don't have to be too far out to lose 2%. And that's the sort of thing we feel we just have to get this sorted out. It's critical to accounting for intangibles, as I mentioned earlier. Extractive industry is going to be a huge area to look at. Your liabilities. Agriculture, which I'm delighted to see the amendments that IASB is putting through, and RIAS piloted that one through. And there was resistance to fair value for agriculture, even though farmers probably know better than anybody else what the fair values are. And it came from the FASB, and I remember the person who was writing the standard, which is Paul Pachter, was challenged by this FASB member and asked where he came from, and Paul said the Bronx. And the FASB member said, well, I was brought up in a ranch in Oklahoma. Do you realize you've got one cow grazing here for every 650 acres? And Paul just looked him in the eye and said, that's the way we graze them in the Bronx. And it was just trying to get them to accept the fair value. I remember saying to Mike Crouch, the guy involved, you know, if you looked out from your deck in Oklahoma and you saw twice as many cows as the day before, do you not think you're richer? And he says, no, I think the fence is down. But fair value is the way you have to deal with things that are sort of commoditized. And of course, financial instruments. This is the big one. Studies have shown that give banks a financial instrument to value, and there's a huge variation. And this is done by the regulators. And nobody's doing anything about it. And that's where we have to come in. Because the balance sheets you're looking at, these are the numbers that are going into them. And the variation is enormous. Now, we'll never get the answer down to 6 decimal points, but we have to close the range. And that's the sort of thing that we're going to have to try and do. At the same time, we're trying to get the valuers to get into a form of profession. Can we have entry requirements? Can we have common exams? Can we have ethical standards? Can we have a conceptual framework? Can we have continuous professional development? Can we have discipline? Chuck them out if they don't do it. And can we have a common credential? We don't know who you are. We know CPAs, we know CAs, but these guys are everywhere. In the UK, it's RICS, a member of the Royal Institution of Chartered Surveyors. Well, does that say value to you? We might know it in the UK, but I don't suppose many other countries do. And the view now is we need a common credential. I'm making this up, but international financial instrument value. At least you know that guy's qualified and there's some institution that's going to chuck him out if he doesn't do his work. At the moment, there's too many cowboys out there. Well, the IVSC is, like ISB, a private sector organisation. It's been publishing standards for about 12, 13 years. And it's now trying to become a bit more professional. Like the ISB, it underwent a change, this time in 2008. It has three main committees, a board of trustees, which I chair, which means I don't get involved in the standards, which is a nice change. I do miss these 2 inches of paper that I used to get every month in the ISB board meetings. I find it difficult to get to sleep without them these days. The standards board, which we have, is the one that writes the standards dealing with financial instruments, retail properties, business valuations, intangibles, and so on. There's a meeting next week in Washington at which April is going to represent us. We've been very fortunate that Grant Thornton has seconded April to us for a year or two to help us get this organisation running. And the idea at that is get people together. They've agreed in principle we should have one set of standards. And this is now moving it forward, copying the new National Standard Setters Board that Hans has set up. And we hope then, we've got them agreeing in principle, now we want to get them down to deal with it. And we have to try and get common credential and a professional basis. Who are the good professionals? Who are people that are totally outside the group? We've been supported by the City of London in the same way as they supported the ISB at the beginning. They're giving us funding for office accommodation and so on. We've got support of the regulators. PCAOB is very interested, the International Forum of Independent Audit Regulators. The most common problem they find with audits is the valuation of fair value. And that's something that we really don't need to have. And we're trying to sort of get an arrangement. We have an informal arrangement with ISB. But when I spoke at the inauguration of the IVSC, when I was in Hans's position, I said, basically, it's the ISB's job to say when a value is used and how that value is going to be crafted, and the detail of the valuation can be done by the valuers. And that's really what we're trying to sort of formalise. We have three main objectives. One set of accepted high-quality global valuation standards. Two, creating a valuation profession, as I mentioned, with common credentials. And thirdly, and we've written to the Financial Stability Board, we need to get together with ISB, with the banks, the insurance companies, auditors and regulators, and we have to come out with a set of financial instrument valuation standards. If we don't, that capital requirement that's being asked for will be very suspect, and there's a big lacuna in the whole of financial regulation, which was there at the time of the crisis. The ISB hadn't time to deal with it, but it's still there, and it hasn't been tackled. Several countries are picking up the standards, the UK, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Russia, and so on. Others are moving in that direction. We've got this convergence program. We've heard this before with the United States. But it's moving ahead, and that's where we are at the minute. I've been here before, and I don't intend to be here too long, but we feel we at least get this thing moving and perhaps fill a hole that exists at the moment. Paul, any questions? Nope, thank you very much.
Thank you, David. Good to see that you're still in fine form. Any questions or comments of David? I guess the council has been doing now for a couple of years, David, is dialogue with organizations such as yours, where we saw there was a lot of mutual interest in terms of the end goal of high-quality financial reporting, and not just the standards, but how they're being applied, measurement being a monumental issue. And so coming back to one of the last points you made, we've been trying just to get comfort, you know, is the boundary roughly right in terms of the cut between when to and some general parameters around the measurement process as opposed to the detailed, important mechanics that leads to a fairly high level of consistency, which I think is what you're striving for. So I'd be curious, do you think the relationship is playing out the way you envisage, or are there things that we should be monitoring for, targeting for improvement?
I think it's working pretty well, Paul. The ISB staff members get involved in our projects and they allow our staff to sit in on theirs, so we make sure there's no confusion between the two boards. And I think you summed it up very well. The parameters are being set by ISB, the mechanics, that's the valuation standards, and that's the ISB's got enough on its plate without getting into that, as we discovered in the crisis.
Riaz.
David, one of the issues that we found when Sri Lanka went full IFRS last year was the difficulty that accountants, CA, had in understanding the mechanics of the valuation and being able to push back. And when we analyzed the reasons, one of the things we found is that the CA syllabus, education, didn't have corporate finance or finance theory in it. So the accountants who came out, who are holding senior positions, knew their double entry very well, but didn't understand very much about or not very comfortable about the mechanics of the valuation, and had difficulty pushing back on valuations that were provided by this valuer. I think there is a need to get at least the future generation can be solved by, you know, incorporating that into the syllabus. But we do have a whole bunch of accountants who need to be brought up to speed on how to understand the mechanics of the valuation process and being able to challenge and push back. I'm wondering whether, while you're setting the standards and others, whether the IVAC would like to do some form of educational material for accountants. How to understand, just like, you know, we came up to speed fairly fast about how to challenge actuaries. There was a time when we took actuarial valuation as a black box number. And now, of course, we have learned to push back and, you know, question them. Whether could we have some type of educational module which the IVAC could do to try and bring these accountants out there up to speed on how to be able to challenge and push back on values and get more comfortable in making judgments on the fairness of the fair values?
That's a good point, Riaz. I must say, having left the ISB, I find the snapshots that are issued very, very useful before I read the full document. I find them, well done, Alan, I do find those superb. And, you know, I think we could do something on that line, and there's going to be meetings with the firms and IBSC, I think in December, because we know the auditors are under great pressure about how far you're going with valuations and can you accept it. And, of course, people can point to an auditor the same way they can deal with other issues and say, how come you allow this value for that instrument, and when the same instrument is a totally different value in somebody else's accounts, and it's the range that's the problem. So we've a lot to do with the accounting profession to try and sort of narrow this thing, but that's a good suggestion. We're not a big staff, Riaz, but we'll have a look at that. Thank you.
I see Bruce up, and then Gavin, and Jim, your point has been taken care of.
Thanks. This is interesting because we had a bit of a discussion this morning at the emerging markets breakfast, and valuations is actually one of the key things that came up. Just our experience from my region, I mean, South Africa itself is a relatively developed market, so most of the time people can get values there. What's really interesting, though, is when you head up into the other countries, especially as you kind of get up into Central, Eastern, even West Africa, the concept of fair value is very, very foreign. Where there are requirements to do fair value, many of these companies struggle. Many companies struggle because it's not just that the expertise isn't there, they just don't know where to turn either. What's also quite interesting about that is that if I look at something like the unlisted equities, at least at the moment under IAS 39, a lot of them are relying on that fallback to cost when they can't reliably get a fair value. Given that's not sitting in IFRS 9 at the moment, this is going to exacerbate the situation for these guys in a couple of years' time because there's going to be no option of going to cost, which means it's kind of going to be a fair value or nothing. And I think these type of initiatives could be very good, especially when you start looking at some of the developing economies, some of the emerging economies, where fair values are a really, really big challenge at the moment.
David, understandably, you focused on fair value measurement. I think another emerging and not inconsiderable mountain to climb will be accountants' understanding of credit risk modeling, particularly in the context of impairment. It's an area I think most accountants today have little knowledge or understanding. In an IFRS 9 expected loss world, that will have to change. So whilst I understand the focus on fair value, I think another significant emerging topic is credit risk modeling.
All right. Seeing no other cards up, I would sense a strong and growing market, David, for the standards. And communications is always a challenge. Sorry, am I missing? Still don't see it. Oh, pardon me, I thought someone was trying to speak. It's about to say, you know, it's an ongoing challenge to make people aware of what you're doing, what we're doing, and therefore I would just urge council members to get the word out and about that your organization exists, and frankly, speaking personally, you know, needs to be strongly encouraged and appropriate support brought to bear, but well done.